Hello, hello. Welcome to the Five Talents Podcast. I'm your host, Abel Pacheco. I interview the top commercial real estate investors in the industry and other experts so you can learn from their experiences. So if you're an investor, a high W-2 earner, a tech or sales professional wanting to invest in real estate without leaving your current profession or managing properties yourself, then this podcast is for you. Or if you're already investing in real estate, either doing it part-time or on the side, and you want to become a full-time investor, this podcast is for you too. You're going to learn a ton. On the Five Talents Podcast, you're going to learn from real-life multifamily investors and other real estate professionals who will stretch your mind on what's possible and share their blueprints for success. I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, hello. My name is Abel Pacheco. I am the host of the Five Talents Podcast. Today, we have an amazing guest. I'm super excited. Mr. James Kandasamy, you are an amazing asset to be a guest here, and I'm just super humbled and appreciative. Thanks for joining, James.
Hey, happy to be here, Abel. I mean, I'm happy that you are doing this podcast because there must be one person out there, at least one person who's going to be getting rich after listening to your podcast.
I have a feeling you're going to leave an impact on a little bit more than one individual, brother. So I've heard your story a number of times.
And oh, cool.
As soon as you said yes, you'd be a guest on the show, I knew immediately this is going to be a great episode. So I'm already humbled and I know it's going to be valuable. So for our guest, just describe a little bit of your background. And then I'd like, you know, to you to give us the full story, but you're with Achieve Investment Group. You started that in 2015. You've done 9 large apartment complex syndications. You've got like 1,700 units under management, under, you know, your portfolio, $130 million worth. That's pretty serious holdings, Mr. Kandasamy. Uh-huh.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I mean, you basically covered it. That's my, real estate ventures, right? Started on the single family side and moved on to multifamily. So we just started ourselves with a true $50,000 startup budget. And San Antonio, where you are from, is where has been growing me when I get started. I live in Austin, but Austin, San Antonio is pretty nearby, right? So yeah, started like almost 5 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
2013 is single family and 2015 is multifamily. Yes.
No, man, that's awesome. So you were able to launch an amazing business. A lot of people partner in syndications, partner with multiple people, kind of that team sport. And I understand you've kind of got a different spin than a lot of syndicators, but you still have a large team. It's just, you know, you have a different partner than I would say a lot of others. So who's your partner in your business?
My wife. Yeah, she runs the construction and property management, right? So I run the acquisition investor relationship and all that. And of course, I do have key principals and all that who brings the balance sheet to the table. Sure. But we are the sole general partners in all our deals. So we just started that way and we just continued that way. And maybe in the future, we will be doing true partnership with other people as we grow bigger and we do more deals. But that's how we have been structured until now. We have like 40 employees working for us right now in our company, and we are vertically integrated.
Yeah, it's a mindset shift that I think a lot of investors, if you're listening new and you're like a single family investor or trying to break into the general partner world, a lot of times you think in real estate, single family, you think, oh, I'm going to try to do this on my own. Well, James does kind of do it on his own, him and his wife, but they still leverage a large team, 40 employees. And so it's very much run like a business. Tell us about your business, James.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a big business. I mean, we are just not buying and going and buying another one and all that. We have asset management, property management, and construction management all vertically integrated, right? So when we buy a deal, we have a team of our staff, who go and do due diligence. And a lot of times we bring our investors as well so that they get to see what we do, right? And at the same time, once we take over the deal, we also do the rehab side of it. So we become the GC of the deal and we continue. So we can see every day on what's happening on our property. So, because we control every knob in the turnaround of our value add deals, right? In apartments. And apartment is a difficult asset class to manage, especially if you're doing difficult deals. If you're buying just a cash flowing deals, that's the easier part, right? I mean, if sometimes you have the market wind behind your back and you probably don't have to do anything. And after 5 years, you said, I double everyone's money. And, you know, that's a different ballgame than what we play. We play like, hey, we have to really work hard on all our deals because it is, you know, a lot of value add component to it. You know, sometimes the market is not behind your back. So you just have really, really force appreciate the deal just by your sweat equity. So yeah, we control the whole pipeline. We are, you know, as I said, we are vertically integrated. That gives us a lot of advantage. And we have been very successful on that, you know, streamlining our process.
That's awesome. For those listening, there's a few terms there. If you're a new investor, you know, I like to say there's few different, you know, many different strategies to multifamily. You can buy and hold, you can build new, you can do a value add or have like a yield play. And that value add component, James, maybe dig in a little bit more on like what you mean by value add. Explain that term for those, you know, that are listening, maybe newer to multifamily investing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Value add is the cornerstone of any commercial real estate. That's the primary reason why people do commercial real estate. Right. I mean, otherwise you'll do a single family home, right? Why not? Right. There's a lot of it out there. You can buy it yourself. You don't have to go and raise money from other people. You know, there's a lot of it in MLS. You know, you can probably buy it, you know, just make money, you know, 8-9% on a single family homes, right? And but you know, this is where I was at the age between single family home and why do I need to do multifamily? Because you know, single family is doing well. I can find deals. I buy myself and the whole equity is mine. There's a lot of lenders who will give a loan for it and all that. But the cornerstone of commercial real estate is something called force appreciation or value add, right? So which means you can go and increase the income or and reduce expenses, and income minus expenses, you get something called net operating income. And every time you increase your income and reduce your expense, your net operating income increases. And that's where the value add comes in. And the value add component can be, you know, just you remodel the interior of an apartment complex and now you can get higher paying tenant to come in and, you know, increase that rent, right? On a 200 units, you know, a $10 increase, you know, you can get like 10 times 200 per month and times 12, that's the NOI increase, right? So, and to take that NOI and divide by the cap rate of the market, that can be, you know, a few $100,000 in increase.
Some serious scale for that 10 bucks an apartment, which correct. I think a lot of single family investors just, it's hard to see that concept if they're new to multifamily investing.
Yeah. Single family, I mean, you can build a palace in front of, you know, a neighborhood, you know, which is, you know, plated with gold. And if all the neighborhood houses is selling at 100,000, your palace would be maybe 120, 130,000, right? Because that's it, because it's based on the comps surrounding it, right? But not for commercial. Commercial is an income stream, right? Investors buy commercial to get that income stream. And when you are able to increase that income stream, let's say that palace is producing 10% cash flow, you know, an investor, and let's say there's another palace or another house, a small house beside that palace is producing 20% cash flow. An investor would want to buy that 20% cash flow, right, by paying higher amount of money compared to that 10% cash flow from that palace, right? So same thing in commercial, right? We buy income streams, right? So the higher the income stream is, the higher cash and cash an investor can get, the more money he's willing to put down. So it's a completely different ballgame, completely different league, and completely different concept of looking at, you know, investment in real estate.
Man, that's awesome. And if for those listening, if you're not taking notes, you're doing it wrong. Hit rewind and bring out your pen and notepad. I like the way that you put that, though. It's just you're really buying an income stream. And the amount of income that's generated, that'll determine how much an investor wants to pour out. And that's, you know, like you said, the cornerstone of a value add is increase that income stream. So you've been a big value add as a strategy investor. Have you done that on all of your deals up to this point? Or have you started doing any yield plays now that, you know, you've got a little more holdings and you're thinking about how do I take it easy on yourself? Or no, everything's a nice, you know, value add project.
Everything has been value add. I mean, yield play is too high risk for me. Right. And let me explain to you why.
I think
people don't understand this. People think I'd rather buy a cash flow deal because it's easy, right? I mean, cash flowing deal is easy. Why you want to do value add? You know, it's too much risk. Of course, value add needs strong operator, right? Not everyone can do it too, but you also make a lot more money. And let me explain why value add is a lower risk compared to yield play. So there's something called a debt. You when you take a debt, right, on a loan mortgage, so you're going to pay amount of money every month to this the lender, right? So the lender is the biggest partner in your deal, right? They own maybe 70% to 80%, and they can take away your property if you, the equity guy, is not doing well. Correct. Yeah, so he's the biggest guy, right? I mean, your equity partner all are smaller guys. Right? They own 70 to 80% of the deal. So you always have to satisfy your biggest partner, right? So you always have to pay your mortgage. Otherwise, they can take away your deal, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what we call the debt, right? And on top of that, your NOI is what your property is producing, right? Mm-hmm. So when you take your NOI, your net operating income, divide mm-hmm. by your debt, you get a ratio called DSCR, debt mm-hmm. service coverage ratio, DSCR. So mm-hmm. when you are buying a yield play, which means you don't have a lot of income appreciation opportunity, right? When you buy a yield play, you're basically saying that there's going to be some growth of rent every year that you're going to banging on, right? You don't have any other opportunity other than market appreciation. That's what the yield play definition is, mm-hmm. right? That's why people like to buy A-class core deal, because it's wealth preservation. There's not much of income left. It's just you take a higher leverage loan, you get that income cash flow, and you're happy, right? There's not much of anything more to do it. Otherwise, they'll call it value add, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So when you coming back to DSCR, so your NOI divided by debt, you get DSCR. On a yield play, on a year-by-year basis, you don't have a lot of opportunity to increase that income. So when you buy a deal, let's say your DSCR is 1.25, which fundamentally means that you have 25% over the debt, mm-hmm. right? So you have 100% debt and you have 125% income to get that 1.25 DSCR. So you basically only have 25% additional money to service your debt, right? And next year you have to get that 3% rent bump caused by the market, mm-hmm. right? Then maybe 1.25 goes to 1.25 plus that 25% plus 3%, right? That's it. Right, so maybe 1.27, 1.28, and then maybe the next year you go 1.2. So you are playing within 1.25, and then maybe 1.3 in the next 5 years, right? Maybe 1.4, 1.5, right? Assuming you're taking a fixed rate debt, right? So you having 30, 40% additional on top of your debt, that's the buffer you have. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, you are saying that markets could continue going to go up. Right? Mm-hmm. So that's the assumption you're making when you're buying a yield play, right? Or you're going to stay at 1.25. Let's say the market didn't go up. You're just getting the income as it is. You're going to be 1.25, 1.25, 1.25. So that's the buffer. The 25% is your buffer. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let me contrast that to a value-add deal, right? Value-add deal, you're also going to buy at a 1.25% debt ratio, right? That's the bottom line number that all lenders will give you loan, right? But now you have value add means you have opportunity to increase income, mm-hmm. right? Of course, you have to work hard for it. So, but 1.25, you're going to go in the next year once you push up the rent, because now you're putting in all kind of capex, all kind of increase, you're pushing up income. So you go from 1.25 to 1.5 maybe in second year. Maybe third year you go to 1.7 and fourth year you go to 2. So the buffer, your buffer against this lender has increased a lot compared to the yield play case. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
100%.
Yeah. So fundamentally, you want to build as much as buffer from the lender because they can take away your deal in case the economy crash.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right. Or the renter don't want to pay your income anymore. Right. So the higher.
Or COVID happens.
Yeah. COVID happens. Right. And people don't want to pay. So, so that's why all my deals, if I look at it right now, I bought my deals at 1.25 and I recently looking at all my debt service coverage ratio. My minimum debt service coverage ratio is 1.5 or almost 1.7 or even 2. Right. Because I've added so much of income.
What is the like your sensitivity analysis or the break-even point, you know, like in your deals, that 1.5, what does that typically cover for your portfolio? Like
it's probably like at a 60%.
60%.
60, yeah, 70, awesome. 65, 70. Somewhere in there. Once you increase that income, your break-even point to cover your expenses become so low, right? So because now your income is so much high.
Yeah.
So I'm saying that, yeah, value add may not make a lot of cash flow in the beginning, but your build up equity on the back end is super high. Yeah. And your risk becomes so low in the deal, right? And people don't understand this very well because people think that I don't mind doing high leverage because I'm doing high leverage 80% on day one, mm-hmm. but I'm doing at 1.25. But once I do my value add, my leverage become like 60% in the next 5 years.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So right? Let me, my income is so much high.
For the passive investors and also new general partners, You definitely want to rewind it and, you know, hit this a couple times. So, but let's summarize it because I think it's mm-hmm. worth noting. It's a very different, not different, but a very conservative strategy that mm-hmm. if you can grasp that mindset, it's not the weird thing. It's like, this is how you do multifamily investing to get the most amount of profit possible for yourself, your team, and your investors. Hello, hello. You're listening to the Five Talents Podcast, and I'm your host, Abel Pacheco. If you're enjoying this podcast, then I know you're serious about achieving financial freedom. Are you ready to create your own path through multifamily investing? Then I know you're going to appreciate our Investor's Handbook for Multifamily Investing. We put together a 65-page ebook, which is a great resource to learn the basics of the mechanics of multifamily syndications. We show you how to evaluate your next passive investment opportunity as well. And the best part is, if you subscribe to our podcast now, leave us a review, leave us a rating, we're going to give you a free copy of our ebook. So take a moment now, leave us a 5-star review if you think it's valuable. If not, provide us some feedback on how we can improve. Then register for the ebook at 5tcre.com/ebook. That's 5tcre.com/ebook. Make sure to let us know you left a review in the notes and we'll send you a copy. Thank you for subscribing to the Five Talents Podcast. Now we'll continue the show. So he mentioned not the yield play, right? Oh, if you literally did nothing to the property, there the units were nice. Every single one of them was improved, meaning like the floors, the fixtures, the countertops, it's still an apartment complex, right? So remember your, you know, apartment unit that you lived in maybe when you were in high school or college like myself, or you visited somebody in an apartment complex. It's very basic, right? But if those units are already completely done, then how do you improve that unit to get an extra 50, 75, 100, or, you know, on the rents? It's very difficult to. So that's why James, you know, is really saying value add, value add, value add. The DSCR, he gave us a good equation for that. The NOI divided by the debt equals your debt service coverage ratio. So if you owed $750K for the year in, you know, for your lending, the lender side of it, your mortgage, and you made $1 million NOI, that's a 1.25 kind of debt service coverage ratio. So if he's pushing up to one and a half, then he only owes the bank, you know, $750K at the end of the year, monthly payments, but he is making $1.5 million. So he's got enough. The other thing I asked him was a break even point or sensitivity analysis. And so that's like, well, 60% or higher, or 60-65%, whatever that amount was, man, if you have 100 units, for example, you could lose 35 of your renters and still be okay. And that's right. How you win. And that's how you're winning.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, for me, I know it's a lot of work, value add, but it's also a much lower risk strategy, especially if an experienced operator is doing it. I mean, it's not easy to turn around a property, especially on value add, right? I mean, there's a lot of moving parts and, you know, you can go wrong if you do it, if you don't have the skill, right? But I think it just makes more sense for risk management. It's always about risk in this market, right? I mean, assume you buy a class property or a yield play deal, right? Mm-hmm. You always have to bang on that 3% or 4% appreciation. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, at some point, renters can't be keep on paying every so much money every year, right? There must be some limit, right? There, right? So how do you get that buffer, right? How do you get that additional equity upside? Just by doing value add.
So help a new general partner with the next kind of line of questions, right?
Sure.
when you first started, you knew, hey, I'm going to head towards a value add. You had the mindset of, look, I want to control as much as possible. I want to remove my risk, which are probably contractors, materials, your project management, you know, things like that, to make sure that the renovation gets done on schedule. How did you accomplish that on your first, the very first deal that you did to make sure that you achieve success in your value add?
So, of course, I mean, that's a really good question because, you know, managing contractors turning around is super hard in this industry, right? That's why people just do yield play because it's easy, right? I mean, it's easy to raise money nowadays and people just want to do easy projects, right? Which is okay for some people. But as I said, the risk is higher, right? So on the first deal, the way we learn, I mean, I'm not a general contractor. My father is not a general contractor to know all this information, right? We go by trial and error, right? So on our first deal, you know, we got the deal. It was first 45 units. And, you know, so I was figuring out how do I get contractors. So I go to Craigslist and find contractors, right? So, and I find one and sometimes they don't work out. So then I said, okay, I'm going to hire like three contractors, give them three different units to do. And after they do one, I'll do another one. And after 1 or 2 weeks, you'll see who's the best. And I fire the other two and keep one, right? And give them more work, right? So that's the best way to know.
What a great nugget right there.
Yeah. Otherwise, yeah, you will never know, right? And Craigslist have really good contractors, but it's nothing to do with Craigslist. In general, contractors are just so hard to find a good, reliable, dependable guy, right? Yeah. And the worst thing sometimes you do is when you hire a GC from single family house to do multifamily. Right? Okay. Because most of the time, the GCs in single family, I mean, they do multiple projects and they do not know how to roll the money. They do not know how to, you know, spend the money wisely. And sometimes they delay your project because their money is stuck somewhere else. They can't hire the subcontractor. So the second tip for your investors is you can work directly as you being a GC, but get subcontractors to work for you. Right. And that's really good because now subcontractors have direct relationship to you. And usually subcontractors are good guys. The GCs are the one that messes up. Right. So because GCs, as I said, they're not very good at managing money, managing projects. Mm-hmm. And they become GC because they may not be able to do the real work. And at the same time, if they say, I have some more connections, I can do nice proposals and all that, they become GC, right? But knowing the subcontractors can be very powerful because you build relationship with them and they like it. Because they know you are a paymaster, because you know you are the owner of the project, you're going to pay them to them directly, right? Rather than a middleman, and you just build that relationship with the subcontractors, and as you keep on doing deals, you know they follow you, right? Because they know you are a good paymaster.
Yeah, and you've got a lot of work. They can obviously, there's 100 of these units, 150, yeah, 170, and then multiple projects, and you know, you, yep, treat them well, it sounds like, and yeah, pay them, absolutely, right and on time, and people turn around and deliver great results.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I like your screening process though. That's a lot.
Yeah, fun. That's the best way to screen people. I mean, people are very difficult to know when you're just talking to them or looking at, yeah, some proposal. You have to put them on the, get the rubber to meet the road and see, yeah, whether the rubber stand or not.
Yeah. What are some of the, like on your first deal, that 45 unit or any, really any, you know, beginning deals, kind of what I'm looking for? Because I do have some questions on how you do it now, but just think back to those first few deals. You did roofs, you did HVAC, you had, you know, some plumbing. How did you, you know, get connected in that world, never having been in that world before?
It's just trial and error. I mean, contractors is all about trial and error. And sometimes good contractors knows other good contractors, so we can get contact within them. I mean, at the bottom level, the lowest level for people who are working, mm-hmm, they are really good people. I see a lot of subcontractors are really good, hardworking people who need to put food on the table for their family, right? Mm-hmm. As I said, and we look for that kind of people, and people who are hardworking, yep, and people who are reliable, people who do good job, and you know, and you keep them, right? You can pay them a bit more, but as long as they're reliable, you're okay.
Yeah. Were you doing the asset management? Oh, well, of course, you're doing everything. But yeah, maybe walk through that next stage. Like you know, had your construction management hat on. I got to make sure these things get turned around. You are measuring them on a weekly basis, a monthly basis. Talk about your project management, your execution plan, and kind of how you work through those numbers. That'd be awesome to hear too.
Yeah, so I'm a very strong project manager, but I never track them to the level of detail that you are talking about every day or every week or what, right? So basically, we give them a target and we go back and inspect, right? So we are very big on doing it right, even though it takes a bit longer, right? And you just train the same contractor over and over again about our expectation.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Of course, they do the work and we go and put punch lists, you know, we stick the blue tape on whatever we don't like. So after a few times we do it, they already learned.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. Boom, yeah. Boom, blue tape.
Blue tape. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just cocky, you know, over here and the seat looks a little funny right here. Fix this picture.
Yeah. And to be frank, I'm not good at it. My wife is really good at that.
She sees all the details, huh?
She sees all the details. I'm okay, done. Let's move on to the next level, right? So, for me, it's all about speed, but for her, it's all about accuracy. So it's a balance, right?
Well,
that's
a good team. That's a good team partnership right there.
Yeah.
So in comparison, mm-hmm. in contrast, like mm-hmm. what you have today, what you've built, because one or two deals, drastically different than 1,700 mm-hmm. units. So, you know, give me a little bit of that, those insights, like how you manage, you know, your portfolio today. How in the world does that happen?
So right now we have like 40 staff working for us. We have like, you know, 4 corporate staff working for us. Mm-hmm. We are not still perfect yet. We still have a lot of work to do as a growing organization, right? But there's a lot of trust that we have built from our, you know, from all our experience for the past 5 years, right? People... And we are more process oriented right now. We're still building our process, but we are doing much better now compared to where we were 3 years ago. And we do a lot of Zoom calls now. We have a lot of tracking indicators that we do. We track a lot of work. Everything needs to be tracked in property management. Otherwise, people won't work. I know that's what people don't want to hear, all the negative stuff. But property management is so hard because you're managing like 1,700 different units.
Yeah.
Right. And property managers are property managers, right? I mean, it's not their baby, right? So how do you manage an employee? It becomes a very critical management skill, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. and just one tip for all your, you know, listeners out there, you know, if you're working on W-2 job, learn project management in your job, mm-hmm. right? How do you manage your work, right? So all that skills is transferable to this kind of work because we are managing people, we are managing a key performance index. We are managing performance of people, performance of project. You know, how does, you know, we're putting charts in terms of how income is growing. You know, I wish that I want to track to the level of detail, like every unit what's being tracked, but I just didn't do it. Maybe it's a good thing to do. I mean, I know a lot of people do that, right? Which unit's being renovated this week? They can do that, but I didn't have the bandwidth to do it. And, you know, since we're buying deals at a really good discount, all that is a small problem to have.
Yeah, keep going, keep on this, on the track record.
Yeah,
you're going to keep growing, and those are probably the biggest impacts. You know, if it's renovated, probably not going to have a renter pick apart some, you know, general some caulking around the baseboards or something like that. But if you buy another deal, that's a big impact on your mm-hmm. business, and
yes.
Makes perfect sense to aim that way.
Correct, so, correct. Yeah, I mean, I didn't have any asset managers to track to that level of detail. But I think the way you train your contractors to meet your expectation, right? We are so hands-on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we as owners, we go and talk to everyone in the company, right? And sometimes people feel like we are their friends, but we're actually looking at all their work, right? But we are just so hands-on, and people know that, right? If they don't do a good job, they're not going to get paid.
Yep. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And so all of this work that mm-hmm. you've invested, you and your wife, has turned into a lot of success for you, your team, but also your investors. Your investors have won through the years as well, right? So
yeah, absolutely.
You tell us a little bit about, you know, the journey of your investors on like where it started and how did you raise, you know, money initially and gain some trust and kind of what you're doing today.
So the way, I mean, I started, as I said, I had single family houses and moved to multifamily, right? In my first multifamily, I had like 4 or 5 investors, which is built through networking. And how did they come and invest with me? I mean, people are, how do they first invest with you? Of course, when you do a single family home, you know, you have to tell people on how well you do it. Mm-hmm. And even just by the story we tell in our single family home, and when we tell them we're going to go to multifamily, we're going to raise money, everybody said, okay, we are going to invest with you. So that's how it started, right? So it's all about, mm-hmm. you know, it's nothing wrong about bragging about what you do. especially if you're doing a really good job, right? You have to talk about it. Yeah, it's, I mean, why do people watch HGTV? Because it's so fun to see houses change, right? And when you show that before after pictures and we show what you're doing and all, it's like a story for people. So a lot of my investors, when I send out my email, I give them really good detailed report on how we do. We take a lot of pictures before and after.
Yeah.
We do a lot of things. So people enjoy all that, you know, then they tell others, right? So, and they feel cool because, you know, they are part of it as well.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. I'm passive in like 400 doors and me and my wife, and she invested separately and I invested separately. And I'm like, oh yeah, I love, like, you know, finding out what happened and what we did.
Like, yeah, correct. Yeah,
my general partner team and those guys did a lot of the hard work, but I get to you know, have those bragging rights myself.
Correct.
It feels great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a cool thing. Real estate is very cool, right? I mean, like stock market, you buy a stock, you do not know what's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
And the next day, the CEO of the company, if he smoked weed on the TV and the stock dropped 20%, and you do not know still what happened. Mm. Right? So you just have to accept whatever the reality is, right? So, but in real estate, you can change an appearance of a real estate by your own hard work, right? You can say, I did this. This is before, this is after. So it's a very cool thing that people love to be associated with.
Yeah. And then the reason that we win so much is you also have, unfortunately, or whatever you want to call it, you've got to deal with some heartaches. I've seen a couple of your posts where, like, I guess one of your properties, like, burnt, you know, a good building of it burnt, I don't know about completely down, but just had a good bit of fire damage. And then you're out there like explaining, hey, this is the situation, here's what we did, here's how we're improving. So I've seen one of those updates, which I thought was really awesome, but you're the guy, you're on the hook.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, as I said, real estate, you can control it. At the same time, you are the top of the food chain, right? So ultimately the buck stops with you. Right. Yeah. You can't say, you know, the management team of that stock company didn't do well and your stock went down.
Yep.
Right. Here you are the key guy. And, you know, I think it's important to, you know, talk about all the good stuff, but it's also to educate people about what can go wrong and how do you handle it. Right. Yeah. Because that's very important. Right. People do see the best out of you during downtime. Yeah. Right. So
I know we're wrapping up, and you know, not gonna say wrapping up, but just I don't want to take more time than allotted, which I would stay on the conversation with you all day if I could. But before we start wrapping up, can you tell our listeners and viewers, if they want to get in your world, if they want to get, you know, closer to what you're doing and how you're doing it, how do I reach out to you? What's the best way to do that?
So my website is Achieve Investment Group, A-C-H-I-E-V-E, like achieving a goal, achieveinvestmentgroup.com. My email is james@achieveinvestmentgroup.com. You can send me a mail. I'm pretty good with my emails. And if anybody want to be, investing passively in some of the deals that we'll do in the future, you know, you come to my website, achieveinvestmentgroup.com. There's a link on top called Invest With Us, and fill up the form once you click on that link. But I'm going to be giving out a free book offer for your audience. I'm supposed to launch this week. It's called passiveinvestinginrealestate.com. Passiveinvestinginrealestate.com. Go to that website. You know, you can get my free book. That's a small.
Is this the one with the red cover?
Yes.
I just picked it up on Audible.
But Audible is expensive. This is free and it's a digital version. So you get
cool. That's awesome. Like, well,
yeah, but you get
an Audible guy. If you're a listener, it's like worth a few bucks. I don't even know how much I paid on Audible. I just click yes. This is the one I want to get. And absolutely. I heard you talking about it on Hunter Thompson's, I think, podcast. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, this is I gotta get it. So. Tell us the title one more time, because I interrupted you.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the book.
Yeah. The domain, the website is passiveinvestinginrealestate.com. You go there and you can get my free book. There's a small processing fee of $3.95, but you'll get that book, which is, you know, sold in Amazon, you know, for much, much higher price, right? So yeah, passiveinvestinginrealestate.com. So the book is about how you want to look at syndication from a passive investor standpoint. Right. It's a very easy read. It's a very enjoyable read. I mean, it was named top 15 real estate investing book by Jim Cramer's The Street. Right. So.
Man, that's awesome. Congratulations on that.
Yeah. And I promise you, I didn't pay for that. I do not know who, I don't have any connection to The Street or Jim Cramer or what. Right. But But for them to review that book of a highly recommended reading, it was a good honor for me. So it's basically look at how a passive investor can evaluate a deal, you know, what they should be looking for, and how they should diversify some of their deals. You know, how do they measure certain risk in the deal, which is very important for a passive investor or hands-off investor, right? So. Because a lot of information is very hard to find unless you pay the big bucks and you have done it a few times, then you learn a lot about it. But this book will give you a very good lay of the land, I guess, of commercial real estate syndication.
There is like so much insight and wisdom and knowledge in experience. And once you've done the number of deals that you have a different viewpoint and eye. And I would kudos to you because I just started writing my first book.
Awesome.
So I'm excited. And I don't know if Jim Cramer's going to give me the reviews that you got, but it's more of my personal story. And just, as you start putting some words down on paper, you realize, oh, there's a lot of meat here, a lot of substance. And then kind of created probably a super mini version of that ebook to passive investing that I did also, but man, did the words flow? And then there's a lot of research.
Oh yeah, a lot of things. I mean, even putting the sentences correctly is super hard, right? And for me, I'm an engineer. I can make that book very complicated, but I chose not to because I want everyone to read it and understand the basic stuff. But there's a lot of difficult concept, but explained in very simple form. I mean, I didn't know that, but a lot of people told me that the book is super technical, but it's explained in very, very understandable and readable format.
Yeah, I'm excited. I literally just purchased it, and I haven't really gotten past the entry point. So I'm excited, and awesome. Man, it's a pleasure having you. Is there anything we didn't talk about today before we go? Is there any anything you were excited to share? Anything we didn't touch on? Anything that wisdom, advice, knowledge, it's your time, my friend.
There's no reason for you to not get rich in the US. So it's a land of opportunity. You just have to work hard. Work hard, be persistent. You absolutely can make it.
How many years have you been here in the US now?
10 years.
10 years?
Yeah.
Maybe before you go, tell us a little bit about just elaborate on what you just said, because there's a lot of people that are from here. I don't want to say we're entitled, but we have some entitlement. This is where I live, and XYZ is owed to me, and I shouldn't have to work that hard for it. And here we are, in the US, where we're kind of spoiled a little bit. Maybe you could give us some insight.
People in the US are absolutely spoiled, including absolutely spoiled. I mean, not everyone, but people who think they're entitled, right? So sometimes if you don't see the color black, you may not appreciate the color white, right? So sometimes you live in one place throughout your whole life, your whole family in one place, you may not appreciate how does other part of the world works. Right? How does the political system works? How does the economy works? Right? So I came from Southeast Asia. I mean, from Malaysia. Right? So, Malaysia is a really awesome country. I mean, so it's still a third world, but we have similar road system. We have similar buildings. It's pretty modern, right? But there's a lot of difficulty in breaking out from your circle, right? If you are you have to get certain education. Not everyone's entitled for certain education. Not everyone can get a loan to come up in life. But here, everything's available. You want to study, you have a loan. You can go to any university and get a student loan, right? So, and even if you do not want to study, if you want to work hard, there's so many companies out here who's willing to honor people's talent. In Asia, you need to be a professional to come up in life. Right, even to be respected, you have to be a professional. Otherwise, nobody will respect you. Right, but here, everyone respect based on your own individual characteristic. Right, and people have freedom. Right, so there's no social blocks in anywhere. There's no reason not to break out. Even I had a friend from UK. He told me even in the UK and Europe, it's very hard to break out. Break out means your family has been doing something for generational, it's very hard for one of that family members to go and do something else.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Wow. So here, like for me, I bought real estate by buying single family home, right? And I don't have the accent of an American accent here. And imagine people selling me a house. You know, I just send letters and I go to their house and they sell me a house, right? Whereas that doesn't happen anywhere else in the world, right? First of all, they say, who is this guy?
Who is this guy? Yeah.
Social blog, you know, he doesn't even, you know, look like me or talk like me. That itself is the first block. But here, there's no such thing, right? People are very open. The laws allows you to do things. You can definitely work hard and come out in life. So sometimes I said, if you've never seen color black, you don't appreciate the color white, right? So it's very important for you to go and explore the world and find what are the different, social justice, social limitations, you know, just go and see what out there, right? And live in different country and experience it. You will really, really appreciate what you have here.
Mr. James Kandasamy, I'm super appreciative that you came on the show today. And I sincerely appreciate your time, brother. I think those are amazing mindsets to have and live in. And you can go get it. There's nothing holding you back but yourself.
There's nothing holding you back. There's nothing, definitely nothing. I mean, people get millionaire after putting bandit sign on the road.
Yeah. Yeah, I started with signs on the back of cars. And
I've done it too. I mean, I didn't get deals out of it, but I've done it. I've tried it.
Yeah,
right? So for a short while.
That's awesome.
But, you know, there's money everywhere in the U.S.
Just go grab it.
Go and grab it.
Listen to Mr. Kandasamy. He will absolutely help you. So, man, thank you very much for being an amazing guest, and I really appreciate it. Okay. If you're listening on our podcast or viewing the show, would love for a positive review. If you heard something today that has helped you in any way, reach out to James, reach out to me, give us some feedback, and like and rate our podcast so that other viewers can see it as well. So, again, my name is Abel Pacheco. I'm with 5 Talents Commercial Real Estate. Our website is 5TCRE, if you can see this here. And I look forward to reaching out. If you have any questions about getting started, multifamily, investing, passively, partnerships, whatever, reach out to us and we'd love to help. So thank you very much, James. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Happy to be here. And I hope I add value to someone.
Oh, you did, my friend. Yeah, a lot of value. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the 5 Talents Podcast. I'm your host, Abel Pacheco. Each week, I'm going to bring you interviews from industry experts and successful commercial real estate investors who all follow their dreams and achieve massive success. You're going to learn a ton, and I hope you tune in weekly for all the new shows. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, I know you're going to appreciate our Investor's Handbook for Multifamily Investing. We put together a 65-page ebook, which is a great resource to learn the basic mechanics of multifamily syndications, and we show you how to evaluate your next passive investment opportunity. And the best part is, if you subscribe to our podcast now, leave us a review, leave us a rating, we're going to give you a free copy for our ebook. So take a moment now, leave a review on the show. We'd love your feedback. Then register for the ebook at www.5tcre.com/ebook. That's 5tcre.com/ebook. Make sure to let us know you left us a review in the notes, and we're going to send you a copy. Thank you very much for subscribing to the 5 Talents Podcast, and we'll see you soon.